Welcome to today's episode of Journey to There, exploring the intersection between personal and business growth. And now your hosts, Tracy DeForge and Russ Reba.
Tracy, it's time to play Who Am I? I've got to bring up the cheesy game show music.
I was going to say, is this going to be Family Feud? Because we pretty much do that every episode.
No, I know you love these little games we play sometimes to open up the show, but you sent me this topic on disruption, and it just, my mind, it just got ahead of me here. All right, so guess who I am. Who am I?
Okay.
You ready?
Ready.
I create an awesome, really cool, modern version of a popular product that's been around for decades. I sell that product directly to consumers.
Okay.
But sellers of the traditional version of that popular product take their big money and they lobby for it to be illegal for me to sell my product directly to consumers in a handful of states. Who am I? Think about that. Along with Tracy DeForge, I'm Russ Reba. This is going to be one of my favorite episodes of the Journey to There radio show. Find us online at journeytothere.com. We're on iTunes, so subscribe on your smartphone. And excitingly, you can even find us on Empower Radio. What's the time of the broadcast?
Oh, our radio show on empowerradio.com.
Empower Radio.
Oh, so excited about that. So we air at 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
On Fridays.
On Fridays and 8 a.m. Pacific time. And if you're international, then just adjust your time zone accordingly. But
and we do
Fridays, 11 a.m.
We do have international listeners.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes. And yeah, we continue to grow in Dublin, Ireland. And I actually had a Facebook exchange back and forth from an entrepreneur in Dublin last week, and it just made me so happy.
Awesome. Oh, you're gonna have to tell me about that. All right, this is the intersection between personal and business growth. Tracy is an unbelievable consultant, author, artist, and somebody that I'm proud to know for over 25 years, and I'm just 24 years old. All right,
I'm only 29.
Did you figure out who I am?
Okay, well, I have a 50-50 shot at this because I have two answers. Oh. So can I give two answers?
They might both be right for all I know.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
All right, what's one answer?
So I'm going to go with Uber disrupting the taxi industry and Airbnb disrupting the hotel industry.
See, now you're making a great point because it's neither of those.
No way!
It's neither of those, but this goes into how this disruption in business and in life is it's key to why we're talking about this today. But is it safe to say that Elon Musk disrupted the car buying business model with his Tesla?
Oh, yes. Okay, so, but here's the interesting thing. When I think about disruption in Tesla, I think about their recruiting practices, which I think we actually referenced on a previous episode, which led us to this topic.
Yes.
And so I wasn't really thinking Tesla in that way, but absolutely, you are totally right. And I just used the word absolutely again, which we also covered
on a previous episode. That goes back to another episode. Absolutely. All right,
I had to get one in for the rest of the show.
I have a feeling you might get some more in.
Absolutely. For the audience.
just a little background. Back in the 1930s, laws were passed to prohibit big manufacturers like Ford and General Motors from selling direct to consumers. And that was a protection thing. It could help. It could put dealerships out of business with the lower pricing and less competition. That was 1930s. Times have changed. The car business has evolved. So to stop an unbelievable entrepreneur like Elon Musk making it illegal for him to sell his cars to the public, I think, is disruption.
It is very disruptive, that is for sure. But it appears as if that boundary has definitely been pushed to the limit and somewhat overcome, because now I have two personal friends that were on the waiting list that have now received their Teslas. And I think the other disruption factor, as I mentioned, that is interesting around the Tesla is the fact that they're created this incredible supply and demand, which made people want it more and more. So you had to put down a deposit for something that you weren't even going to even see, touch, or feel for another 4 years.
Well, here,
now, so exciting.
Yes. And it's getting better, because now there's the Tesla Model 3, which if you reserve yours now, they say they'll start delivering at the end of 2017, I believe. So yes, there is a demand, there is a waiting list, and people are waiting a long time for this product. That tells you something.
Well, you know what it tells me? I gotta say, it actually creeps me out a little bit. Uh-oh. Because I'm always about like staying in the moment and being in the present. Uh-huh. And really trying. I mean, obviously you have to plan for the future, but to put a deposit down on a car that's expensive, you just don't know where your life is going to be in 3 years. I mean, if you live my life anyway.
Here's what you're explaining. You're explaining the fact that you could often be an impulse buyer. And by the end of 2017 or even the beginning of 2018, when your Tesla arrives, you're like, wait a minute. Did I buy this?
So 2016. Well, I have another interesting, since you brought that up, I thought this was one of the most fascinating things that I found out when I was doing the research for this topic, because I think, and I'm, you know, if you're listening, I'm pretty much feeling like you might be thinking that this whole idea of this disruptive economy and how big shifts are happening, like we mentioned, hotels and Airbnb and Uber and taxi services and things like that. For me, that feels really current. It really feels like this whole idea of disruption was something that just started happening. But
it does feel new.
It does feel new, but when I was researching, I found out something so interesting, and that is that if you think about it, this actually goes back to transitioning from the horse and carriage into the motor vehicle. And there's actually a quote, which I love, that Henry Ford said, that if I had asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse.
Interesting.
So, isn't that fascinating?
He did make a faster horse called a car. And the funny thing is if we were in that today, we would just make the faster horse by, you know, pumping them with hormones.
Oh, gosh, no. Oh, yeah, let's not even go there. But this is the other thing I found interesting because, and this is all about branding and staying current and fresh and making sure that you are meeting up with the demands of the perception of your audience. So I don't think of Ford as being disruptive in today. Like we're talking about Teslas. They're snazzy. They're new. They're obviously very disruptive. But Ford has disrupted once again because they made the Ford 150 out of aluminum.
Oh, yes.
Which the F-150. The weight. Uh-huh. Yes, the F-150. Okay, Ford 150, F-150.
I'm a car guy.
Girl versus boy, but whatever. But they're making it out of aluminum, which is shaving 22% off the weight.
Oh, look at you. You did your homework.
And thus it makes it more fuel. I know, because trust me, I would not have known this just walking down the street and looking at a F-150 truck. But my husband is pretty car savvy like you, so I can get my info around the house.
I love this whole idea of disruption because, you know, we do the same thing. We tend to do the same. It's human nature. Continue to do the same thing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing. But and then you have somebody like Elon Musk or what's the Uber coming in and saying, you know what? We've been doing it like this for years. There's a better way. I like it. What I'm looking forward to in this episode is hearing, because we're all about the intersection between personal and business growth, hearing about how you have the twist on the personal and lifestyle disruption in our lives.
Well, and the thing about that is we could actually fulfill and fill out and talk the whole remainder of the show just about different examples of disruption and how they affected our lives and the economy. But when I wanted to do the show, what really came to my mind first was I wanted to demystify, if you will, the myth around becoming a disruptor. And I know that the whole concept is really sort of pie in the sky. These businesses that we're talking about in terms of the biggest ones, I mean, let's think about Apple, for example, and iTunes. I mean, Russ and I, we've both obviously been in the radio business for a really long time. We experienced the literal disruption of iTunes to the radio and record business. So in that sense, if you're an entrepreneur and you're creating an idea or have an idea for a business, I think there's a lot of myths around the fact that you can't be that disruptor, or to be that disruptor requires certain criteria, i.e. Silicon Valley, certain, you know, there are some gender stereotypes around it. So when I brought forth this topic, I thought, let's just kind of break the glass ceiling of the, let's disrupt the glass ceiling. Let's like break the myth. Let's make it make you motivated to not only understand why you could do it, but some of the things that are happening behind the scenes. Because one of my favorite things is getting, like, I will watch anything that's like behind the scenes, because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors out there, and there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in my business category, not in my particular business, but in my business category. So I am very focused on pulling the curtain and showing the behind the scenes. So that being said, I did want to hit on a couple of those myths. And I mentioned one of them, and that is about the Silicon Valley situation. So I think, you know, if you were asking me and I hadn't done the show and I wasn't in this world and I was just walking down the street and you were doing a man on the street episode and said, where do you think the majority of disruptors come from? I would answer Silicon Valley. However,
Just quickly tell me why.
Because it feels so tech savvy. And in my mind, a lot of disruptor businesses are based on new technology. I mean, I was fascinated when I first learned how Uber actually worked, that it was completely a cashless transaction. And really, the disruptor was not the fact that you can get a person driving their own vehicle to pick you up. The disruptor was that you can go on an app, put in your destination, a car will arrive, you can see the car coming on the street that you're standing on, and oh, by the way, you don't have to deal with credit cards, cash, calculating a tip, any of that. It's all cashless.
So now, mind you, I haven't had the opportunity to use Uber, so is it basically an electronic payment system?
It is. It's all tied through PayPal, which of course is now one of the largest disruptors to how we pay people and pay businesses versus like peer-to-peer as well as business-to-business. So they combine the disruption of PayPal with the disruption of transportation. And the lifestyle component of that, which I love, is I know personally several people who live in large metropolitan cities who sold their car because
they ran
the numbers, and by the time they paid for their car payment, their insurance, where to park in a larger city, their time in traffic. I mean, we're both ultra familiar with the Atlanta area because we lived and worked around there for a long time. Think about the fact that if you were taking an Uber instead of driving your own car, you're not using your own gas. You cannot avoid being stuck in traffic in Atlanta. There's no question.
Exactly.
Sorry, we don't have the solution for that today.
I don't think there's going to be one tomorrow either.
I don't think so. But my solution for the lifestyle component of that is think how much you can get done in an Uber when you're stuck in traffic because it becomes a mobile office.
You can look down at your smartphone, take care of your emails and your texts. Now, I just want to throw in, we need to explain the disruption factor, the big one with Uber, and that is how it knocked the taxi service industry on their butts.
It did, but it did so because of the reasons that I just mentioned, because they can't take cashless transactions. You can't find, a taxi gets dispatched, but you don't know where it is. And in addition to that, you are in a situation, and this is really important to the female sector of Uber users, is that you have, their drivers are vetted, the routes are routes, depending on your southern accent, they're tracked. So for example, if because I was just in New York last week for business, and I chose Uber over a taxi, and the reasons for that is because I was traveling in the city alone, and I really liked the cashless transaction because it was easy for me to keep up with my business receipts. And third, God forbid, if I'd gotten in some random situation that wasn't safe for me, it's tracked. It's tracked.
So you feel safer with Uber than than in a cab?
I do. Okay. I really do. Now, the counterpoint to that, to advocate for the taxi service, they have one thing that Uber does not have in New York, okay? And that is being faster, because it's, in most cases, unless it's a rainy day at rush hour, you can pretty much flag down a cab a little bit faster than you can program in an Uber and the Uber can get to you because they still have to follow that route that we're talking about. But in other cities, I've never had that issue.
Now, going to the disruptor part of that business model, this is a situation where Uber comes along and says, there's a better way to do it. There's a cashless way to do it. This is the opportunity, and they may already be doing it. This is an opportunity for the traditional cab service, the taxi service, to say, hey, you know what? This is what people are wanting and needing, so we need to work on a cashless basis. And it would be interesting to see if it hasn't already. I'm not a cab passenger, but it would be interesting to see how what kind of apps, what kind of cashless system the taxi cab companies are implementing.
Okay, so as of Friday of last week, nothing. It is still exactly the same, which as a business development strategist that I eat, breathe, sleep, and think about ways to improve systems and strategy, I am astounded by the fact that they haven't come back punching. But think about it. Okay, so Blockbuster was a household name.
For those young people who, we used to go and rent videotapes.
I know,
from Blockbuster Video.
Blockbuster.
And they would have little stickers on them, and it said, please be kind and rewind, or you will get a 25-cent charge for not rewinding your videotape. And then they went to DVDs. But
I love that. So now we can basically say, please be kind and rewind your statement to our listener right now who is running with their show in their ear thinking, I have no idea what she's talking about. So we're going to be kind and rewind and say that Blockbuster was very successful company, and they were disruptive for their time because they were going from basically trying to find a movie or a show on TV or going to pay the fee to go watch the movie in the movie theater. They were giving you the opportunity to go and rent the movie and watch it at home on your VCR, which, again,
or Betamax. Or Betamax.
Or even further back than that, there were these things that looked like record albums, and they were movies on disc. And now is scary because, yes, we had...
Forgot about those.
Yeah, yeah. I used to watch a lot of Richard Gere, American Gigolo on those. That'll tell you how old that one is. My point is that Blockbuster disrupted their industry. However, they missed the curve and did not step up and compete with technology, which in my opinion is a lot like what's happening with the taxi industry right now. And they were phased out by customers no longer needing their services because... Then came the Netflix.
You had Netflix, but you also had Redbox, and I just used Redbox over the weekend because we do have a Blu-ray player, and for a couple of bucks we can rent the latest movie that's out. But keep in mind, Redbox needs to understand that they need to evolve and get some kind of Netflix type of thing going, because we're not going to need the tangible disc in our hand anymore. We don't need it anymore because you can just stream it online. You can download it. So the whole tangible disc idea is going away, and you need to evolve.
Well, and here's the counterpoint to what I was starting to say about disrupting the myth, and that is, so you may feel like this whole thing feels really overwhelming and like, okay, this is great for all these people, like I said, in Silicon Valley, because it's all based on technology. Well, not really, because first of all, geographically speaking, Spotify, which is now a music delivery service, not unlike Pandora, which were both disruptors to iTunes, and iTunes was the disruptor to radio. I mean, there's just this pattern we're starting to create for everybody, right? And the thing is, you can be one of those disruptors by two things. One is, if you have an innovative idea that you feel like will disrupt the current economy situation, then you go ahead and start getting that put into place, because ultimately the disruptors we're talking about now are going to ultimately phase out, and there will be a next level that will be needed, and you'll be there to meet that demand. And otherwise, that you don't have to be in this circle of tech-oriented geography to be able to do something like that. One of the perfect examples that I have in terms of looking forward as an entrepreneur in a small business, and I'm going to wager on this, Russ, that you have never used this service, but I think if you are female, and I know that
I'm
we
not.
Have some, and you're listening right now, thinking about what you're going to wear to that cocktail party that you have coming up, but you do not have the money to buy something new, and you certainly don't want to wear something you've worn before,
right.
There is a service, and it is called Rent the Runway.
Ooh, and that's a great name because it says exactly what it is. Tell me if I'm right. You basically can get one of these glamorous runway style outfits, and you don't have to buy it. You just use it for an event.
Right, and then you mail it back. And so here's the interesting behind the scenes story on that you're not going to get anywhere else. And that is back in 2010, I actually was at a women entrepreneurial. It was just, you know, it was just some girls casually hanging out in the city. And that included the founder of Ann Taylor and a couple
Sweet.
Other names you might recognize. But I'm not going to name drop. What I'm going to say is
after
the story.
I just did.
Right. And so the girl that was sitting to the right of me was Jennifer Hyman, who started Rent the Runway. Now, the reason I want to tell you this story for the women and men who are listening who have an idea and they think, I'll never be that big disruptor. Well, guess what? In 2010, she was sitting next to me at dinner. She had just gotten her investment in capital that day.
Wow.
And she had she'd had the idea. She'd been working on it for a while. It launched in 2010. It's 2016 now, and she is been considered one of Fortune Magazine's trailblazers
Wow.
of changing the face of business in 2016. So, yes, there's a male-dominated stereotype for disruptors and innovators, and there's also females that have really broken through on a couple of different businesses like Howl's, which is an interior decorator home remodeling site, Birchbox, which is the subscription service for beauty samples. All these were developed by females,
wait,
and they were all disruptors.
And you say, I don't know what you have to back up that statement that, you know, it's a disrupting in business is a male-dominated thing. I'm a subscriber to Fast Company magazine, and I was just reading the latest issue, and it's like, it was like the top 100 innovators or something like that, and a lot of them were women. I was like, how things have changed.
I can explain that. Let me explain that, because I researched the top 50.
Okay.
And 4 out of the 50 were females, and I think I just mentioned 3 of them.
Okay.
So that stereotype is justifiably founded and sourced.
Maybe it doesn't help that I was reading from 100 back.
Right. But that's okay, ladies. You still made the list. Okay. And one other quick thing, because, I mean, we could go all day about
on and
this,
on,
is the age stereotype, which we've done a full episode on Never Too Late to Start. I wanted to just put out there that there is this company called Impossible Foods. You can look it up. They do one of the coolest things I may have ever heard, and that is they make sustainable food from plants. And I'm not kidding. They literally manufacture meats and cheeses without using animal products.
Wow,
now,
what's the name of it?
Don't ask me how you do that, because I do not know.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Impossible Foods. But the key to this story is that the founder is, his name is Patrick Brown. Now, I did not have dinner with him, but he's a 60-year-old Stanford biochemistry professor. So, hello, women, age, geographic, none of that is a barrier. Those are all myths.
Huh.
Okay, so can I just tell one more behind the scenes
yeah.
story? I know we're short on time, but we have a disruptor that's coming forward that I'm not even sure people really
I'm astounded
yet.
Right now, because I'm on the homepage for Impossible Foods, and they're showing this unbelievable looking hamburger.
Uh-huh.
And it was made by nature with help from humans. That's the that's the tagline.
So cool.
Interesting.
You guys have got to go
right,
look it up.
Yeah.
But don't
yours.
Do
go
it
ahead.
Until I tell you my story. I have a disruptor that I would think that you would not be familiar with. And the reason I say that is because the founder of this disruptor is a close personal friend of mine and is actually like super close, like friends and family close. Okay. And he started talking about this years ago.
Okay.
Okay. And this is that whole thing, like, entrepreneur, had an idea, startup, didn't live in Silicon Valley. It's all based on technology. And it has literally disrupted the mortgage industry.
Ah.
And just a really quick, because it's been fascinating for me personally to really watch his growth. I mean, his company is like off the charts.
I cringe when you say mortgage, because I can't stand all the paperwork.
Exactly. Okay, so you just named it. Okay, so if you watched the Super Bowl and you saw a commercial that was all around an app that was something that you could put all of your information in this one app. It's called Rocket Mortgage. Oh. It's done through Quicken Loans.
Yes.
Okay, this is my friend who did this.
Wait a minute. I mean, your friend created Rocket Mortgage?
Well, Rocket Mortgage is the white label of my friend's technology.
Ah.
But yes, he did.
Interesting.
And it eliminates all the paperwork and hassles of getting a mortgage. And let me just say, because I love to brag on him, the Super Bowl ad that ran, that website got 14,000 people to hit that website in the first minute it aired. First minute, 14,000 people. So you think that that's going to be a popular disruptor that we're going to be talking about probably next year? I guarantee it.
Interesting.
Yes. So I cannot close out this episode without talking about how we can have disruptors in our life that improve the quality of our life, because we are all about the intersection between personal and business growth. And I'm not going to lie, I was so excited about the innovation and business side of this topic that I really were like, how am I going to even pull the personal side, right?
Oh, but you're all about.
That's what I'm all about. It's what I love to do. And when I reflected on it, I was like, of course, I can think of like one really big one right now.
Okay.
And that is that a lot of people that grew up maybe more that's closer to our age, they were always told, like, you got to buy a house, you got to pay it off, you got to live in it, you've got to, you know, the mortgage is important, right?
Wait, we got to pay off the house too?
Well, I mean, technically you don't own it, and the bank does, but so the lifestyle disruptor that I want to touch on is that I'm going to disrupt the myth that you have to buy a house and live in it and be happily ever after in the same residence while you pay it off.
Right.
Because there are people who are now, like I said, that they're using Uber instead of buying a car.
Right.
They are choosing to rent instead of buy because they're finding out that it's cheaper. You can rent an oceanfront residence cheaper than you can buy one,
obviously. Well, the oceanfront, yes.
But then you don't have to pay the insurance. You don't have to pay the HOA fees.
And you live by the ocean.
And you live by the ocean. The other cool thing that I found was the whole idea of people retiring and they're taking their monies from their retirement and they're living on cruise ships. And
you had put something on Facebook or somebody put something on Facebook and I went ahead and I read into it and it's like, it sounded like it was a comedian doing a bit, but it had some substance to it with retiring on, instead of going to an old folks home when you're up there in age, just going on a cruise ship and all your food is taken care of.
They have medical on premise. And you get to see the world. Now, for me, I'm not sure how much that would work out because I do have a tendency to get seasick. However, if I was living on it, I'd probably get over that, right?
Yeah,
so
I think
how
so.
Cool is that?
That's very
how
cool.
How cool is that?
Very cool.
Oh, and I think what you meant about the joke that I posted on Facebook was that there literally is one last Blockbuster left, and they have a Facebook group called The One Last Blockbuster Standing.
Is this a group that still uses that Betamax technology?
No, well, I have no idea but they're like, they send out hysterical tweets on Twitter about being the last standalone Blockbuster, so you have to look that up.
You know, I can't wait until this show turns into a 1 hour, 2 hour, or even a 3 hour block, because we always have so much to talk about. We're never going to run out of fun and topics and information that
because
we could go on and on with this topic. But as we wrap up today's episode, I want to dig into our bag of comments here. This is not actually a bag of comments. It's a wrapper from my black and white cookie this morning.
I mean, seriously, I can see the like the chocolate on it. That is disgusting.
This is one from Connie in Phoenix, and she says, I just finished listening to the last show. I listened to six of them today. Connie, you got some time on your hands.
Woo, Connie, you go, girl.
They are addictive. You and Russ are doing an amazing job. Well, thank you very much. I am relating to and have experienced a lot of the roadblocks you describe in these shows. Keep up the good work. And Connie, because we mentioned your comment on the show today, I am going to send you my cellophane cookie wrapper that I just used as a prop for the bag
of
comments.
With the cookie eaten out of it, Connie. Even think about getting a cookie off this one.
There's not even crumbs left. Along with Trixie DeForge, I'm Russ Reba. Hey, we enjoyed hanging out with you at the intersection between personal and business growth. This is the Journey to Their radio show. Subscribe on iTunes. Listen on Empower Radio. That's Fridays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Or binge listen like Connie did right there at journeytothere.com. Is there a thing such as binge listening? I know.
There absolutely is. Thanks to Netflix for disrupting that. So we're binge listening. I love it.
We love disruptors.
We hope you've enjoyed today's journey, and we invite you to visit journeytothere.com to download full episodes, find show notes, and connect with us by signing up for our newsletter. We want to hear from you. Give us feedback or ask any questions by clicking or tapping Contact Us. That's journeytothere.com.